tells the following story of a certain magician who exhibits the trick of dying. In front of the great king, a magician approached a stack of valuable garments, jewels, coins, and so forth, all placed there by the king. Taking a jewel necklace, the magician tells the king, "Now I'm taking this necklace, and you can't have it." And he makes the necklace disappear. "Now I'm taking this gold coin, and you can't have it," he says, and makes the gold coin disappear. Next, challenging the king in the same way, the magician makes 7,000 horses disappear. And the magician creates the illusion that the king's children, grandchildren, brothers, and other family members have attacked each other, and that nearly all are dead from the violent quarrel. The king hears the magician speaking, and at the same time observes these things taking place before him as he sits in the great assembly hall. Then the magician says, "O king, I no longer wish to live. Just as I have studied magic, so also by the mercy of the lotus feet of my guru, I have learned the mystic meditation of yoga. One is supposed to give up one's body while meditating in a holy place. And since you have performed so many pious activities, you are a holy place yourself. Therefore, I shall now give up my body." Thus speaking, the magician sits down in the proper yoga posture, fixes himself in pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi, and he becomes silent. A moment later, a fire generating from his trance blazes forth out of his body and burns it to ashes. Then all the wives of the magician, distraught with lamentation, enter into that fire. 3 or 4 days later, after the magician has returned to his own province, he sends one of his daughters to the king. The daughter tells him, "O king, I have just come to your palace, bringing along with me, invisibly, all your sons, grandsons, and brothers in good health, along with all the jewels and other items given by you. Please, therefore, give me whatever you consider fitting remuneration for the wisdom of the magic that has been exhibited before you." End quote. In this way, even by ordinary magic, one can simulate birth and death. It is not difficult to understand, therefore, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although transcendental to the laws of nature, exhibits his illusory potency so that ordinary fools will think the Lord has left his body like a human being. Actually, Lord Krishna returned to his abode in his own eternal body, as confirmed throughout the Vedic literatures. End of the purport. Vrindavan Eva Manavedi Prasiddha Gomotra Trafi Krishna Balarama Supadam Vulay Gnanam Param Paramai Krishna Sitaram Chitam Sandhasta Deva Prabhupada Namonam Asiri Samsara Dukkha Jalato Padita Sitama Kodari Nabrama Parai Kavali Kutasya Duravashana Nigarita Sinarasaya Sichitan Nitandra Namadehi Vadavalam Bham Kaladar Shachivarno Gokadesha Vijoro Sahasara Vanavrindai Kridamana Vrijesho Atabara Jatavesho Rindu Vitam Varadyo Jagadajana Heto Ramakrishna Dosmi Vanchakopatu Vrijesha Kripasana Vrijesha Vidanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Nama Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 So after this, you will see all the arguments given that Krishna can actually protect his body by ascending his own abode. And actually, he did not disappear. Just like this disappearance of the Lord is just like when the devotee, in the terms of the servant, puts the deities to rest. Sleep is considered to be like a kind of death. And so the devotee puts the deities to rest as part of service. Then, and tries not to disturb the Lord at inappropriate times. But the Supreme Lord, situated within the heart of the devotee, wakes the devotee up. "It's time for you to wake up and take a bath and serve me." You know? So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not actually asleep. He's actually always alert. In the same way, his servant Tulsi Rani, she's not asleep either. You know, although plants like darkness, you know, like that. So we let her have her darkness. But the reality is, she's always awake. She's constantly there. The Supreme Lord is within the heart, and his consort is always within the heart. And when you think of them any time of the day or night, they're there for us. There are appropriate times to render service to the Supreme Lord and his consort. But they're always available. Even when the deity doors are shut, the devotee can meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and get the benefit of his company by chanting the glories of the Lord. or chant the glories of his spouse, you get the benefit of her association also. So it's like that. So the Lord appeared to do so. Now the whole thing is that he enacted his disappearance pastime because he was planning to remove his dynasty from the external vision of the world. And previously in the Mahabharata, at the end of the war, Gandhari was criticizing Krishna that you're the personality of Godhead and my dynasty has been destroyed. You could have prevented it from being destroyed, but you didn't. Therefore, you are ultimately responsible. Therefore, as my own dynasty has been destroyed, 36 years hence, your own dynasty will be withdrawn. And Krishna smiled and said, Tathastu. He accepted that because he said, I needed a way to remove my own dynasty. Kuntakam kuntakeneva is described in the first canto as just like a thorn removing a thorn. The other dynasties were very powerful and no one could remove them because they were all manifestation of various demigods that appeared to serve the Supreme Personality of God. No one could kill them. They were very powerful. But the Lord used a thorn to remove a thorn. Used a yadu to attack a yadu, is described. This way, they removed themselves. And the demigods just simply went back to their abode. And the Supreme Lord, Balaram, manifested himself like a serpent swallowing himself up. And he left. And then Krishna left, and the self-same body went back to his abode. At the same time, Brahma and Lord Shiva and others, they could saw the misty potency of the Supreme Lord in play. And they were not at all bewildered by this thing. Because they know that the Supreme Lord is present within his glories. When the devotees, in separation from the Lord, want to know how we're going to see the Lord, will be able to see the Lord. The Lord pacifies them within the heart, telling them, just chant and hear our pastimes. Those are non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you chant and hear those pastimes, they are non-different. Those pastimes have been glorified in so many different ways by different poets. And therefore, those glories have taken shape in so many different wonderful glories. And exquisite Sanskrit poetry. And the devotee is recommended to memorize that poetry that attracts the heart. Whatever that attracts the heart purifies that heart, by which the Supreme Lord becomes manifested more and more and more and more. So that's the idea. That is actually the idea of the glories of the Lord. The Supreme Lord is not different from those glories, and those glories glorify the Supreme Lord, written by his devotees. And actually, it's described just like the ornaments on the Supreme Lord's body are beautified by the beauty of the body. So in the same way, the glories of the Lord beautify the poetry written by the great personalities. If the poetry is their service to the Lord. And that poetry is glorified and made beautiful when it is offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who is the essence of all poetry. The Supreme Lord is known as Uttam Shloka, who is glorified by the best choice verses. And those best choice verses are sometimes very, very elaborately contrived by their poets and are very attractive. So whether it is the Supreme Lord or his consorts, the potencies of the Lord's glories and the glories of his consorts are so pleasing to the mind that by hearing about them, one is purified. One becomes happy by seeing the architectural, the poetical architecture written by those astonishing servants of the Lord. And the ability to do that was given by the Supreme Lord directly. So one has to appreciate that. Although the Vaishnavas sometimes use do not sign their name to the poetry, because they say that whatever has been done by me is not done by me, but by you. So Krishna gets the credit. So sometimes Vaishnavas don't put their signature on that as the authorship of that poetry. Some Vaishnavas do, some Vaishnavas don't. So, nonetheless, the poetry becomes very attractive to hear and chant. That's our immediate activity, is that if you find something that's very, very attractive to you, learn it. And ultimately, you don't care if it's good, if it's bad, if it has some defects. Because Bhagavatam states that even if there was a defect, still such poetry is heard and chanted and accepted by people that are thoroughly honest. Still, if you're a Sanskrit grammarian, you may compare manuscripts. You may argue that this is superior to that, or this is older than that, or this is more relevant than that. You know, that's for the grammarians to argue. As far as the audience is concerned, our business is to be a svabhava, to relish. So our business is to relish. It doesn't matter what it is. Our business is to hear and chant. You know, like that. Of course, sarpo chisto yata payom. A Vaishnava mukadigirana puta hari katamrtama shagana naivakarta pyam sarpo chisto yata payom. If somebody is a non Vaishnava, if some scholar, let's say, collegiate individual, is a non Vaishnava, then his words are not to be chanted. Sarpochista yatapaya. They'll consider it to be just like milk touched by the lips of a serpent has poisonous effects. Still, the kavis, the scholars, will take their points in consideration. Will take their points they've made in consideration. Preferring to hear and chant the words of the liberated previous acharyas, they'll take the points of other scholars into contention as part of the argument, you know. But they prefer to hear and chant only the words of the worshipable tikacharyas, commentators on the shastras. They'll hear and chant their words. Like that. So it's interesting. So to keep Kunti Devi's, to keep Gandhari's words true, to keep the sages like Narada Muni, in other words, true, the Lord enacted his disappearance pastime. It keeps their words true. At the same time, the Supreme Lord never disappears. So it's just like a codicil. Like when one breaks it with charanam, like that, then it's considered to break the fast and not break the fast at the same time. Just like a while ago, somebody asked, well, look, a codicil fell like this, and then on the next day, the Dvadashi Tithi and the Trayodashi Tithi were all on the same day. Nityananda Trayodashi was on the same day. How are you supposed to break your fast? And I said, you break it with charanamrita. It's breaking the fast and not breaking the fast. So you get away with it either way. Either way you look at it, you break your fast and you don't break your fast. It's either way you look at it, you know. And I was also relishing today verses about Tulsi Rani from Hari Bhakti Vilas, and saying that if somebody offers in the month of Magh, which is January, February, or the month of Vaishakh, Vaishakh is like July, Kartik, October, November, to the Lord, the Tulsi Garland, the Lord becomes so pleased by that offering that the Lord grants the boon of to the offerer the benefit of all austerities, the benefit of forming Dvadashi Vratam, Ekadasi Vratam, the benefit of Jagaran, staying up all night, like that. The Lord awards that. So I thought that's come for those that don't do it because of their conditioning. Basically, we don't do it because of conditioning, like that. We think we require to sleep, you know. Or our children will require to sleep, or something like that. My health may be impaired if I don't sleep, you know. Something like that. It's basically conditioning. And the Vaishnavas that are not conditioned, they'll say, sure, do whatever you want, you know, like that. Thank you for coming to whatever you could on the Ekadasi night. And the rest of us stay up all night. And what happens to your body? Your body may be impaired. Or something like that. Who cares? You know? Ultimately, the material body has to be thrown anyway. See, as Bhaktisiddhanta said, physical illness with Hari Bhajan is preferable to physical fitness without Hari Bhajan. You know? So the material body has to be thrown anyway. And actually we see very candidly and very practically, if you do Jagra on Ekadasi, Krishna reciprocates within the heart much more than before. And it's actually very, very astonishing. So then when I was thinking about that, looking at the shloka, then I was looking at that shloka on Hari Bhakti Vilasa, I thought, man, what happens if a devotee offers the Supreme Lord Tulsi Garland and stays up awake all night in Ekadasi and does Dvadasi Vratam in that individual capacity? Because individual capacity, you can upgrade everything. You can chant more rounds. You can do more service. You can think about Krishna much more. We have our institutional capacity, what is minimally prescribed by the institution for the loka, for the public. You know, 16 rounds, 4 regular principles. Keep your nose clean. Don't bother anybody. You know? Don't offend anybody. Basically, that's just, you know, that's basically for the public. For your individual capacity, you can always upgrade that, you know, as much as you can. Whatever we should always understand that whatever we offer Krishna, Krishna says, yeah, thank you very much. Can you do a little more? You know. And whatever you give Krishna, he goes, wow, thank you very much. Can you do a little more? And whatever you give Krishna, he says, thank you very much. Could you do a little more? You know. So in this way, the devotee can never ultimately be satisfied. Whatever you offer the Lord, you can always increase it. And one always should strive to increase it also. We should always strive to increase it also. And the Supreme Lord, if the devotee actually strives to increase it, the Supreme Lord becomes so satisfied by that. He gives himself to his devotee. To the extent that the Supreme Lord gives himself to his devotee, one feels jiva mukta, that one is liberated even within this body. Although one keeps silent about it because you never really know. And because you never really know, therefore you never really know what happened to your God brothers or God sisters. It's very difficult to ascertain. When somebody departs, you ask, was Tulsi Rani there? Was Shalabram there? Were the devotees there doing kirtan? You know? Was it an auspicious tithi? Parents' day. And like that. Because there are 6 things mentioned in Garuda Purana, Sarodhara, as giving gateways for liberation. This is chapter 8, verse 26. Ekadasi Vratam, and you always try to improve it. Gita, that which is something. Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, any Shastra. All Shastras are some. Gangambu, Ganges water. Tulasi Dalam, Tulsi Prasadam, thrown into the mouth. Vishnu Padambu, Charanamra. And Namani, the holy name. Marane Mukti Dhani Cha. Those that toy, these 6 things award liberation. Our business is to increase these 6 things. Stack them up as high as you can. We also heard that one who dies in a goshala becomes liberated too. Not a bad idea. Considering that goshalas are quite rare, quite difficult to see nowadays in Kali Yuga. So if you see them anywhere, living with the cows is not a bad idea. Fact of the matter is our previous acharyas like Raghunath Das and others, they were walking from Bengal like Raghunath Das was leaving his parental home and traveling incognito so as not to be discovered by his rich father's men. And he would travel on the way to Puri. And you know, you walk as long as you can until you get tired and you find some householder's house. And not to bother the household, you sleep with the cows. And the cows are very mellow, you know. And they are very accommodating, you know. And they also have a huge amount of heat coming from their body. So if you crash out in the grass next to the cows, you won't have a problem. Even in the middle of winter, you know, you just won't have a problem. The cows are quite warm. And then the householder will see, when he comes to serve the cows in the morning, oh, look, there's a baba. Here's some sadhu here. And they'll give him some milk or they'll give him something to eat, you know, something like that. Some without bothering the household. They would just simply crash with the cows, you know. So it's very interesting. Cows are really cool. The more you love cows and be with cows, you start to wonder, what would life be without them? And actually that's Indian culture. Indian culture was everything was around them. And What you get out of cow dung and cow urine, which is the benefit of serving the cow throughout the whole life, milk products become a joke in comparison. Literally. Nowadays in Kali Yuga, they're keeping cows only for the milk products. And if the milk products stoop below a particular level, then they send the cow off to slaughter. And Garuda Purana Sarodhara says that the cows become contaminated when you kill them. And mantras become contaminated when used to hurt somebody. And Brahmins become contaminated by eating the food offered to the ghosts. And fire becomes contaminated when it burns a body. And Tulsi becomes contaminated when used for mundane reasons, such as a healing herb. And therefore devotees don't use products that contain Tulsi, like Boroplus or sometimes soaps or things that contain Tulsi, and it's just a marketing scam. And if devotees make those products and offer those products to the Supreme Lord individually, then that's part of service. It could be done, but not commercially done. Mantra goes to the seed, Nietzsche, the shloka says. And fire is contaminated with burning a body. It's interesting. Fire previously, they used it. They actually, when you're bringing a body for cremation, they'll actually take a sacred fire from somebody's house and they'll carry it in procession. They'll carry it in procession and then use it to burn a body. But once the fire is lit with the body, it goes out. It consumes the body and then it just goes out. Allowed to go out. That fire is allowed to go out because it is considered muchi, contaminated. Like that. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His consort are always there in His glories. So one can see that the particular pastime of the Supreme Lord attracts one, then one tries to see multifarious authors who glorify that pastime in various ways. And this way it becomes very, very attractive. The poetry becomes very attractive to hear and chant. Like, I'll give you an example. Yamuna Rani is glorified by many devotees. And some groups of Vaishnavas, the Pushti Margis, for example, they worship Tulsi, Yamuna Rani, just like we would worship Tulsi Rani. And like that. And they have, neat, the good old days before there was potted water. Everybody had to go to the river for everything. To wash their pots, take a bath. They would take a bath 2-3 times a day. And the river would give them sustenance as the mother, wash away all their contaminations, their cares, their worries, their anxieties. And they would offer loving prayers to her and worship to her. And before entering her waters, they would worship her and enter the waters and like that. It's so nice. And this neat Sanskrit, there are actually about 8 of them, 8 astakas glorifying Yamuna Rani. 2 of them are quite famous in our line. Rupa Goswami's prayers and Vallabhacharya's prayers are considered quite noteworthy and well memorized. But there's at least 6 more written by other Vaishnavas. And some of them are really, really neat. They have really long meters and very tongue-twisting meters and really interesting poetry. The sadhus really tried a lot to serve with their mind. And it's very pleasing. Very, very pleasing. Same with Ganga. Same with other holy rivers. All wonderful. All wonderful like that. So, Krishna can do anything for His devotees. And because Krishna does a lot for His devotees, it doesn't appear logical that Krishna would allow His own material body to be, His own body to disappear like an ordinary material body does. Therefore, they understand it to be a play of the illusory energy. Like that. That's the idea. And the arguments will be subsequently given. So the disappearance is never really talked about. Moja Lila, it's part of Bhagavatam, but it's not very palatable for the Vaishnavas. They don't really dwell on it. They don't really like it. Because basically, Two, one should not be the bearer of bad news. That's one thing. And the second thing is, the Supreme Lord never disappears. He enacts his disappearance pastime as a role of the illusory energy to confuse the demons and other people who think that the Supreme Lord is an ordinary human being. And just to satisfy them, the Lord executes his disappearance pastime. And the devotees don't give much credence to it. It's like Gauranga's disappearance. It's alluded to in Chaitanya Bhagavad. It's not really. And, you know, and different devotees talk about it. He disappeared into the Tote Gopinath deity. He disappeared into the knee of the Tote Gopinath deity. Like that. And it was after Advaita Acharya said a very cryptic verse that Lord Gauranga accepted. That he who has called me is now giving me permission to leave. So they say like that. Okay? But actually, it is not really dwelt with so much. Vrindavan Das Thakur just only indirectly refers to it. And basically, he stops his narration in Antyakanda of Chaitanya Bhagavat in a very, very interesting way. But he doesn't say anything. He doesn't say anything about it. He doesn't say anything about his disappearance at all, because disappearance is not really that important with the devotees. Because the Supreme Lord is always there. The batteries are probably dead. Yanta Rudani Maya. Batteries are probably dead. Not the end of it. So, and that's interesting. That's also part of it. A devotee's hearing and chanting should be very, very important. And one should not stop. Just like in the kitchen we play DVDs or something like that. I kind of think it's kind of a cop-out, to tell you frankly. Because it's like ear exercise for the ears, like that. It's a cop-out. Why? Because if your ears become complacent, you don't have to memorize something. I just go through one ear and go out the other. You don't have to meditate on it, you know? And that's the problem. We should meditate on something. Yep. DVDs are not bad if it pushes you to memorize it. If it inspires you to memorize it, then it's good. And if it doesn't inspire you to memorize it, well, what was it? It's just ear exercise. Just like a sadhu. If you don't ask a question, then what was it? What did you get? Ear exercise and eye exercise. That's all you got. You didn't get any benefit. You just got some titillation of the senses. That's about it, you know. So the glories of the Lord are always purifying to the heart of the ears. How much did you get? Well, if I just let it go through one ear and out the other, I got a little bit. You got something. Something's better than nothing, yeah. But the this business of a devotee is Shrutadharana, yay, Brahma says in Bhagavatam. Hold the nectar that you hear. Did you hold it? So, we have to, and that's what akadasis are for, to tell you frankly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in Chaitanya Shikshamrita too, from akadasi to akadasi, you make your short-term plans for long-term prema. So part of your short-term prams is hearing and chanting. So akadasi is a good day to try to pick up some slack and where you left off from the last akadasi. I should memorize this, that. Your list to memorize should be really long. You know? And friendship means distribute the nectar. You pass it out to your friends. You know, like that. And for you, it is specific. And from there, from them, it is generic. So you always, friendship means you always try to find that which really will hit the raw nerve. Will really cause somebody to jump. Will really make somebody really, really happy. That becomes specific for them. And provide that. It may be generic for you. But after some time of hearing and chanting and memorizing, it will also purify you. And you'll see nectar where you never saw before. That's why Bhagavad Gita is always fresh. Bhagavatam is always fresh. Shastra is always fresh. Because the heart becomes purified. And you see nectar where you never saw it before. So the Supreme Lord, He never disappears, actually. He does this extra, due to His illusory energy, it appears that He's done His disappearance pastime. But actually He never disappears. This is why the Vaishnavas don't hold Moja Lila to be very important. They're not the carrier of bad news, and the pastime is basically done by the illusory unity. The Supreme Lord is always there with his devotees, always present. When you chant his name, he's there. When you think about the Lord, he's there. When you chant the glories of the Lord, he's there. Huh? And that glorification. And that's what a devotee does to improve. And in our individual capacity, we're trying to improve. So improving means pull out your list what you've got left to be done and memorize that. And sometimes the Supreme Lord is very kind when a devotee takes a sankalpa. Today, for your pleasure, we will learn this, you know? And the Supreme Lord, if he's pleased by that attitude, then he will make devotees' words right. I'll give you an example. I was in London once, and it was Ram Navami Day. And I memorized a verse from the 9th canto, chapter 10, when Ramachandra appears. And it was shloka number 4. And basically what I liked about it, I was attracted to the shloka because it was a whole Ramayana, Leela, compressed into one shloka. And the meter was very chivalrous too. Well, Ramachandra was a Kshatriya. So the meter was very chivalrous also. That was attractive. And it was an all concentrated shloka. You know, you can expect Shukadeva Goswami to say something quite concentrated, you know. Because the whole idea, he said, well, my dear king, previously you heard there's so much Ramayana. So, you know, we're just going to give you just a small smattering of Ramachandra's Leela. You know, like that. So he gave a small smattering, you know, just to improve your taste. And if you want more, well, then that's what Ramayana's for. You know, that's what Valmiki Ramayana's for. Some devotees, like from Diwali, they'll chant Diwali till... I've met Ram Bhaktas that from Diwali, they'll chant all the way to Ram Navami. And then there's another set of Ram Bhaktas, Brahmanas, that said, and from Ram Navami till Diwali, we chant, you know. Which means they never stop, you know. The point is that if somebody's attracted to the pastimes of the Lord, you read them again, and you read them again, and you read them again, and you read them again. And they're pleasing, you know, like that. You want some detail that you didn't see in Bhagavatam? Go to the Tikka Acharyas. You need more further detail? Go to Valmiki Ramayana, you know. And it gives you interesting detail. Whatever you're curious about, you go to the different sources, and it purifies you and enlivens you like that. So that's the idea. Hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord is the foodstuff for the devotee, and ultimately, that absorption is the eyes to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead through those glories. Ultimately, we have to enter those glories so much before we die that we're not even externally aware. Gauranga said that was the definition of a devotee. The ultimate definition of a devotee was that they're not even externally aware. Before he or she leaves this world, they're not even externally aware. They're so absorbed in the Supreme Personality of God, its name, thing, form, pastimes, that they're not even externally aware of what's going on. And they leave their body. Just look. They throw it somewhere. And literally, they could care less. It's described in Madhurya Kadambini by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur that in the other two stages, the last two stages, bhava and prema, the devotee is dragging down in the pure body, waiting for the opportunity to grow. He describes that they're literally waiting for the opportunity to grow, which means they're hearing and chanting, and they're hardly externally aware. That's what they're supposed to do. Yeah. This is them. Them. And they're hardly externally aware. That is actually what we're supposed to do. Everyone in this room and in the world is an Ayaram, Gayaram, and Ayarani, Gayarani. It's a question of time. We have to leave this world. The question is, what are we going to do to prepare ourselves? And the body breaks, just like any machine, any stupid electronic machine we got has a life. It has to die sometimes. Okay? And we can play with it. We can try to fix it. We can try to repair it. Ultimately, it has to be changed in due course of time. So Prabhupada describes in 3rd Canto, Chapter 2, Verse 17, the famous Ayur Harati Vai Pumsa Shloka, that from the day and the night steals away the duration of life of everybody except for those glorifying the all-good personality of God. In the end, the last sentence of the purport is quite good. The destruction and disease of a devotee is nothing but an impetus for accelerated devotional service. When the going gets rough, the rough get going. And if we think about it, you know, if we're going to let a cold, a flu, you know, an ache and a pain stop our service, then what's death going to do?
Shit.
You know? Death is much more painful, you know, like that. What's death going to do to us? If we're going to let anything stop our service, then what's death going to do? So practice means, when you're hale and hearty and we're serving Krishna, that's not service. Service to Krishna is when times get rough and you still serve Krishna. That's a devotee. It's the same thing with friendship of devotees. When you're doing okay and somebody's your friend, they're not your friend as much as those that when things get rough and somebody sticks by a devotee anyway. They're your friends. You know, so it's important to do like that. We have so many conflicts and difficulties, you know, institutionally we have. Something happens. Or interpersonal dealings with other people. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions that. In interpersonal dealings, if it causes you pain, look within. Castigate yourself within. Become determined. Nothing can disturb you unless you allow it. So our business as devotees is not to let anything bother us. If we let something bother us, it means the illusory energy won. She put a noose around your neck and just strangled you. It'll strangle you to death. You see? Why should we let things disturb us? You know? So what? You know? It was very funny. I have a god sister, Prabhupada's grandniece, and she was with her husband and a temple in North America. And his friend, my other godmother, and his wife, they were the presidents at the time. And they were living in the building, top floor. Yet that devotee's wife, my god sister, wasn't coming to see the deities. And this Bengali god sister of mine, she says, "What offense did Gaur Nitai do that she doesn't come to see him?" You know? And I was laughing like that, you know. You can't tell a Bengali girl, "Don't go see Gaur Nitai." You know, it just doesn't work. Don't make garlands for Gaur Nitai. You know, she'll never, it just doesn't work. You know, it just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't connect. You know, it just doesn't, they can't relate to it, you know. Vaishnavis love the deities. It's just a part of it, you know what I mean? Like, so it's very funny. So when she said that, "What offense did Gaur Nitai do that she doesn't come to see it?" I started to laugh and I realized that we can be affected by any politics anywhere on this planet. The deities never offended you. Go see them. Right? So that's the first thing. Two, if we get disturbed, if we allow external circumstances to disturb and interrupt our service to Krishna, it's a test of our sincerity. We should not let anything disturb it, our service. Somehow or another, we have to be determined how we're going to continue our service. Three, our service to Krishna is inspired by devotees. We must be accountable to some devotees. If we may choose who we're accountable to, we have Shraddha, you know, but we should be accountable. They should see our sadhana. That helps us. And another thing that comes to mind was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's statement that he who flatters me is my enemy and my constructive critic is my best friend. So we should keep ourselves in company of those that are critical of us. We will improve. The deities never committed an offense to us. why should we should continue to worship the deities. Of course, in separation, you can worship them in separation. You can worship them in photos, you can worship them. But it is good to do some personal service. Keep the company of Vaishnavas, specifically the critical ones. And our service is sacred. We should never give it up. We can give up our life, but we cannot give up our service. No? And our association of Vaishnavas and our service should never be given up. It's important to keep that. Otherwise, Maya's job is to try to help or distract us, to use our mind of independence not to serve Krishna. And it's happened to so many devotees. They become affected by this politics, this and that, sidelined. It happens all the time. Put yourself in the shoes of the authority. What can they do? You know, they had to make a policy, and the policy's got to be universal, you know? And that's all. They're just simply establishing a policy, you know? And there's some, and externally there's a winner and there's a loser by the policy. But Krishna never liked that. If you take an initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, if you're serving the Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis, then Krishna has accepted you. And the Krishna never leaves you. And Narottam Das says that very clearly. That ashray loye bhaje, you take shelter of Krishna to worship him. Krishna charanya hai jaje, and Krishna will never give you up. And ara sabamara wakaran, and everybody else dies uselessly in this world. Krishna never gives up his devotee. Krishna never gave you up. But and also we have to think, whatever has happened to me is a test of my sincerity. It wouldn't have happened otherwise. And it's temporary. If Krishna doesn't like it, then Krishna will change it. Or Krishna will effect a change. Or maybe Krishna wants me to do something for other Vaishnavas somewhere else. It's like that. You know? We have to see everything as Krishna's arrangement. Somehow or other. It would not happen to me unless Krishna wants it done. Either to test my determination, to purify myself, to teach me some lesson, or Krishna wants me to do some service for him somewhere else. But one should never give up the chanting and the association of devotees. That was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's last words to his disciples. That never give up the 16-syllable Hare Krishna mantra as your be-all and end-all. Never give up, never become disturbed that the mass of people are not chanting Hare Krishna. Don't let that stop your chanting Hare Krishna. And our business is to become dust, atoms of dust at the feet of Rupa and Raghunath. That's our business as devotees. There was another sadhu, Radhanath Maharaj, met in 1971 in Vrindavan. And his name was Rancharji Maharaj. Sri Vaishnava sadhu, served for like 70 years or something. 7 years means, you know, when you serve Krishna for like 50 years or plus, then you get began a realization. So his realization were encapsulated in 4 points, which I thought were so cool. Maybe I'll even find Sanskrit eventually to prove it. He said that there are 2 things you should forget and 2 things you should remember. Don't think that you can remember the last 2 things if you're not prepared to give up the first 2 things. And what should you give up? You should give up. If anybody's done anything, if you've done something good for somebody, forget it. It was your duty. And if somebody's done something good for you, forget it. Huh? If you've done something good for somebody, forget it. Oh, and if anybody's done something bad against you, forget it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It says if somebody's done something bad against you, forget it. And if you've done something good for somebody, forget it. And that's first 2 things. And the second 2 things is always hear and chant the name, fame, form, and activities of the personality of Godhead. That's what you one thing you should remember. And the next thing you should remember, always remember today might be your last day. If today's your last day, why? What get involved with politics or this or that or stupid arguments? Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes it in Gitavali. Tutcha jai parajai krodhing sadve shanyajane. What do you get by insignificant victory or defeat? Our anger over the bodily conception of life with other living entities. You don't get anything like that. Bhaktivinoda koi kodi goda padashroi chidananda rasamai ho radhakrishna namaguni. And the bhajan he says, Bhaktivinoda says, just absorb yourself in Lord Chaitanya and chant Radha Krishna's glories. No? There was a bhajan, very, very short bhajan, to provoke the Bengalis on the street. Bengal. It's in Gitavali in the Kirtan section, called Ekbar Babu Mane. Just consider it once. Think about it just once, you know. And it's a very, very nice bhajan in Gitavali. I learned it in 1981. Really, really sweet. It's nice. It's a nice bhajan. And so, what do we get by you useless, you know? Krishna's testing me. He's teaching me what I should avoid. Even in the worst case scenario, if something is bad, let's say somebody's behavior is bad, we should not be the cause of that. Like I asked my sannyas guru once, I had some pain. The institution caused me. Okay? And I was opening my mind that I had this pain. And he said, one, your deities have not abandoned you. Prabhupada has never abandoned you. I have never abandoned you. And if the institution is caught, institutions are not perfect. And the next point he said was, if the institution has caused you pain, then become determined that you're not going to be the cause of the similar pain to anybody else. And when he said all that, it was very cool. I really liked it. And it very much pacified me. I mean, it didn't completely take away the pain. The pain was still in the heart, but it didn't stop you from going forward. And later, and if the pain is in the heart, you don't think Krishna doesn't know it? Huh? He knows everything is within your heart. Krishna knows exactly what you're going through. And if Krishna is thinking that this devotee is in pain, it's stopping their Krishna Seva or Krishna Smarana, Krishna will deal with it. It's a fact, managerially. People will be very loath to admit that they made a mistake. You're not going to get it in writing that they made a mistake. It just, and I don't know why, it's just something about management that they can't admit that they did something stupid. It's sad. But it's basically a fact. Don't expect an apology. You'll be lucky if you get one. You know? The thing about it is, go forward. Don't be a cause of the same pain for anybody else. Huh? And sometimes they rectify it. They'll rectify the pain by reducing the pain. But they'll still say, what we did that time was right. You know? You know, like that. They're not going to say, we did something stupid. But if they feel that something was ultimately stupid, then they are going to rectify it. And you shouldn't hold on to the pain. But they'll say, well, at the time, our decision was just, it's all we could do, you know. One has to see. That's also another thing. You may not agree with it, but at the same time, you have to see that, well, if you were in their shoes, in that circumstance, what would you do? Well, maybe we would have to do the same thing, you know, if we were in that same circumstance. But the fact that they rectified it later on shows that they really didn't ultimately think that it was fair. So one should forget it. One has to go forward. As a Vaishnava or Vaishnavi, our business is to expand ourselves, our service, to upgrade our service on our individual capacity. Go forward. Aparada. Appa is opposite and aradhana is worship, the opposite of worship. A wrong mentality, whether it's namaparad, sevaparad, vaishnavaparad, dharmaparad. In a broad category, it is wrong mentality. you do the right thing, you rectify that bad mentality, then you start to become lifted. It doesn't necessarily mean the reaction will be lifted. Just like, for example, Devikanandan Das was previously Gopal Chapel, and he committed offense to Shiva Stoker. And because of that offense, he became a leper. I didn't get the pramana that his leprosy was finished. By his bhajan, by his activities, by the itihasa, I didn't get any pramanam that his leprosy became finished when his mentality became purified. And ultimately, who cares? The body's got to get thrown eventually. See, if he died of leprosy or he died a hale person, you know, 30 years later, what does it matter? You know? Right? What does it matter? The important thing is his mentality became okay, you know? And that was Nityananda and Gauranga's mercy. And Srivast Thakur's mercy. And his spiritual master, Purushottam Thakur's mercy, that Devikananda Das's mind became purified. Like that. But we must commit offenses. Offenses is out of ignorance. Seva aparada is out of ignorance. Nama aparada is out of ignorance. We're conditioned. We're not perfect. So we're going to commit offenses to the devotees, to the holy name, to the Dhamma, to the Supreme Lord. It's all due to avidya. But our business is to become in knowledge. And when you understand it, then you don't do it again. It's not what you did wrong. What are we doing going forward? You know? Like, it was so funny. I'll tell you one story. I was in Lithuania in the winter festival. One Vaishnavi raised her hand. She said, well, I used to have a Tulsi Rani at home, but she left. And now I'm scared. You know? I'm scared to have a Tulsi Rani now because I'm afraid that she might leave again. I said, oh, come on. I said, what kind of logic is that? I said, suppose a lady had a miscarriage. You know, sometimes it happens, right? You can't hold the baby, something, right? She's embarrassed. She'll never get pregnant again. She'll never try again to have another kid. Oh, come on, lady. You know, suppose your husband loses his job in the market. Okay? He's embarrassed, huh? He's embarrassed, huh? He'll never go in the job market again. Come on, you know. It's the same thing. It's the same thing with Tulsi Rani. When she leaves, I did something stupid. Figure out what you did wrong, fix it, and go forward. You know. At least she's transcendental to her form. You know, she's transcendental to her form. We should lament if temporarily the service was taken away from us. It's not a permanent thing. You know, reflect, purify, go forward. That's all. Yeah. It just, as long as you beg and you go forward, then that's the main thing. The main thing Bhangsi Das Babaji was saying was dake. We should call out. We should work hard for the Supreme Lord and do dake. We should call out and beg. And whatever we do, our work should increase our begging. And our begging should increase our work. And our work increases our begging. You can always upgrade that. So, I want to thank all the devotees that have tolerated our existence for the last few days. And all of you are very great because you're so tolerant. And how may I serve you? You got a few minutes if there's questions. Yes, Prabhu.
You spoke to us of departures from the material world, Krishna's departure, the living entity's departure. You spoke to us of glorification of the Ganga. You spoke to us of glorification of Krishna's birth. I wonder if you could talk to us and perhaps glorify a bit the Viraja River and what we find when we get to the other side of the Viraja, the pastimes of Krishna in Mathura, in Dvaraka, and in Goloka.
The problem is in Garuda Purana Sarodhara, which I have, it doesn't speak of the Viraja in very good terms. The river is considered to be a very, very hellish river. That could be an external thing. There are others. I mean, I've seen currents in India named the Baitarani, you know, which is basically, you know, a very hellish river. but the term was given to some rivulet, you know, a Baitarani, you know. because people recognize the name. Oh, it's the name of a river, so we'll give it this rivulet this name. That, you know, like that. You know, not necessarily that that river is disgusting, you know, like that, or to be avoided, you know, like this. So it depends which one you were referring to, the Vaitarani.
The one separated from the material world and the spiritual world.
Yeah. But I have not heard any Mahima. It doesn't mean that you can't get it. Just like the joke is, if you haven't seen your sister in 40 years, if you Google for her, you'll find her on Facebook somewhere. I mean, the joke is you can Google for any damn thing. And I found the most amazing glories about Tulsi Rani. I found it by Googling, you know. And once I was trying to serve her with a pastime, I was making a stained glass painting of Gauri Tirtha Bihar in chapter 7. And the details of the painting was that Krishna took the disguise of Gauri Devi to capture Radharani's, to stop Abhimanyu and Jyotila from taking Radharani away from Vrindavan. That was the whole idea. And therefore, to understand about Krishna's disguise, what does Gauri Devi look like? And it wasn't described in the pastime. And what did she look like? Vrindadevi came in the heart, she suggested Google. And I thought, let me try it. And I was shocked. I got the description. Gauri Devi's got four hands, has a white sari on with a gold border. She's got a mala in her hand, and a bell, and a mirror, and a citron fruit. And that citron fruit, that's weird. It doesn't look too Indian. What does a citron fruit look like? So I got a picture of that, and I sent it to the artist, and the artist was able to replicate it like that. Because Krishna's disguise, he came right in front of the deity. And when Radharani went there, they go, "Radha, your devotion for the deity is so much, this kid stepped out of his form to see you." You know? So Krishna really accepted this really good disguise, you know, and he really covered himself up as Gauri. You know, and he was, you can't tell the difference between the two. You know, that was Krishna's intention. So I asked Bhakti Gaurava Narayan Maharaj that, should we make it look like it's Krishna under a disguise? Nah! He said, if you make it look like you could find Krishna somehow there, then that will be an insult to his ability to disguise himself. You know, you cannot, when Krishna disguises himself, you cannot tell. Like when Krishna becomes like Shamsaki, the gopis say, "We never seen this girl before. What village does she come from? Who's her husband?" No. No. "What's your name? We never saw her before." So when Krishna took this form, he told Vrindadevi, "Become my sister." Vrindadevi said, "Okay." You know? And then later on, when Krishna took the disguise, then first Abhimanyu and Jyotila, they go there and they say, "Hey, look, there's Krishna's peacock, Tanvantika. Tanvantika means who dances very expertly, you know. There's this black snake, Krishna must be nearby." And Vrindadevi goes, "Nah, the peacock was asleep. And Krishna went away. It's only my sister, the goddess of Pandirma, Nikuncha Vidya." And Padma and Shaivya, see, it was interesting. It was actually Padma Gopi who provided the disguise cloth. You'd think that she'd be in on the plot. But evidently, after Krishna disguised himself, she couldn't even recognize that. And she went, "Nikunja Vidya? Who is she? You never met her before." Vrindadevi went, "You don't know my sister? Nikunja Vidya, the goddess of Pandirma. No, we never met her before." You know, this means that the disguise was really cool, you know. When I read that, I thought, the disguise was really good, you know. "No, we never met her before." It means the disguise was really, really convincing. You know, it was like a compliment to the disguise. Yeah. Krishna did a really good job. He disguised himself really good. Another pastime. Radharani got super angry. You know, Krishna must have been with Chandra or something like that, you know, and her friends. So Radharani became angry. It's interesting. Chandravali is Radharani's cousin. Chandra Banu's daughter. You know, and the Banu, Chandra Banu, Risha Banu, and Banu, these four brothers, right? And so, and they lived together at Varshana. And naturally, their kids run around and are with each other. But Chandravali is Radharani's cousin. You know, that close. You know, that close, really. So Krishna was with Chandra. Must have blown her mind. She got angry. Nothing black. All you girls will have to dye your hair. Because most Indian girls have black hair. So you know, nothing black. No black dresses. No black dresses. You know, nothing like that. And so Krishna goes, wow, that's really serious. Vrinda Devi, her anger is really serious. What should I do? Vrinda Devi goes, Krishna, you have to listen to me. Well, what do you suggest? You know, look, first you have to give up. Take this cloth from me. I'm giving you this saffron cloth. And you must relinquish your yellow dhoti and your peacock feather and put your flute away. And here I'm giving you this ektar. And you become a baba. You become a renunciate. And you go to Yavata and you strum this ektar, chanting Radhanam. So he's strumming this ektar, chanting Radhanam, and he goes to Yavata. The leader goes, there's a baba outside. And Radharani goes, ah, baba, you know, this baba, that baba, give him what all babas want. They want some roti, something to eat. You know. He's not hungry. He wants to see you. And he says that you're very angry with somebody. That's not good for your health. It's not good for your health and welfare. You should give up your anger. I'm not going to do that. Radharani goes, the leader goes, no, 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 no. You have to do what the baba says. Otherwise, pop lagiga. You'll get sinful reactions. Pop lagiga. So Radharani became pacified. Pop lagiga. Well, I don't want to get sinful reaction. Well, okay. So he went outside. And he says he's a great Jyotish. He can see the future. Well, it's all right. Lalita goes, you can see my sakhi's hand later on. Doesn't read hands. He reads foreheads. No, no, no. You can't. You know, my sakhi will not lift her veil for anybody. He's a very great renunciate. He's a very great, you know, celibate monk. You don't have to worry about it. So then Radharani lifted her veil and had eye-to-eye contact with this baba. And he understood who this, by the eyes, she understood who this baba was. Then the baba went away, put his saffron cloth back on, his yellow cloth on, put his peacock feather, came back with his flute, and Radharani couldn't be angry anymore. Jai Vrinda Devi, you know. Vrinda Devi did this amazing pastime. Woo-hoo-hoo! Vrinda Devi's so smart. There was another funny pastime. And Radha Krishna Ujjvala Kusuma Keli, Rupa Goswami describes it. It's the usual Dan Kaley, you know, fighting, you know, going on. That you girls have collected these flowers and Kamad David sent me and you have to pay tax to them. You're breaking these flowers like this. And you say that Vrindavan belongs to you, Radha says, but it belongs to Vrinda Devi. Vrinda Devi gave it to us. So how does it belong to you? So then Krishna says, Vrinda Devi, who is more charming than many goddesses of fortune, is my chaste wife. If you do not believe it, you can ask her. The Dharma Shastras say that which belongs to the wife belongs to the husband. So when you say Vrinda, mean multitude, I say it means us two. I like that shloka. One, Krishna's group, Krishna will never lie. In Krishna's group, Krishna's not a liar. You know, and this is proof that his statement is true. Two, the shrine was dedicated to her, Vrinda Devi, so she's the Sanoshan. Three, was in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, it mentioned that Tulsi is the wife of Shalagram Srila. So maybe Krishna doesn't marry her in Braj, but somewhere else he does. You know, so I accepted that on that basis. So then Radharani, she becomes annoyed with that, and she turns to Vrinda. Is this true? Are you married to this fellow? If you were married to this fellow, then you would blush red and you would run away from here. But you don't run away from here. So Radharani is saying indirectly, you're not married to this fellow. And evidently, Radharani wanted to provoke Vrinda Devi to say something bad about Krishna. Now, Vrinda Devi is very diplomatic. She loves Radha. She loves Krishna. She's not going to be pitched in the corner. You know. Vrinda Devi goes, oh, Radha, why are you talking like that? He said, the whole forest of Vrindavan is manifested for the beauty of your lips. And she says it in like 10 slogans, and Radharani becomes absorbed in that. And totally forgets what she was arguing about. And that's really maybe she's a fucking diplomat. She's very diplomatic. She's very smart. Vrinda Devi is not going to be, you know, pushed. that I will support this party and I will hate the other party. She's not going to do that, you know. She's dutivari, is he the best of the messengers. Other sakis, they will, because they're in Radharani's camp. If Radharani tells them to massage Krishna's feet, they're going to do that, not for Krishna's pleasure, but for Radharani's pleasure. You know, that they're strictly in Radharani's camp. But Vrindadevi, she's like cross camp. She crosses all the camps, you know, because she has to serve all of them, right? She has to provide everything in Vrindavan for all of the camps, you know. She's very liberal to Chandra's group. She's very liberal to Krishna, Balaram, and the Coward Boy. She's very liberal to Radharani. She's liberal to all of them. She has to serve all of them because she serves Vrindavan. She embodies Vrindavan, and Vrindavan follows her order, you know. So basically, she has to straddle. By her constitution, by her service, she has to straddle all the groups equally, you know, unbiased, like that. She has to straddle all the groups. That's her. Yes, Prabhu?
Is it true that no one's allowed to utter the name of the cousin in front of Radharani?
Who, what?
Chaturani.
What about him?
No one's allowed to mention that name. They just call it by the C word. They call it the C word. They don't actually say the name in front of Radharani. So it's not what said.
We have to think that, well, you know what's interesting? Is Ananda Vrindavan Champu is written by Kavi Karnapur, who's supposed to be Radharani's servant. But he's like an unbiased journalist. In that book, which he wrote, he describes a lot about Chandravali and all this. And I was thinking, good, he's in Radharani's camp, but he's actually an unbiased journalist. You can't, they have to see it for what it is. Chandra's camp is to increase the attachment to Krishna by creating an obstacle. A Vaishnava of substance should always think that obstacles are opportunities. They're tests of our sincerity. Any obstacle, they're not an obstacle, it's actually an opportunity in disguise, you know, of an obstacle. Yes, Prabhu?
In the years of purification of Varshad and Yamuna, Yamuna, River Yamuna.
What I've really memorized was the two, Balabha's Astakam and Rupa's Astakam. But I actually have about six more. And it means that I should get to work. Now, lovingly, I found out that by glorifying Tulsi Brandi, it contains glorifying Yamuna also. It's like, and you think about it, all these devis, they're friends now. You know? They're friends. So, like, Tulsi Asatara Satana Mavali, 108 names of Tulsi. A lot of sacred rivers' names are there within. So I was going to say that, well, either these goddesses' sweet qualities are limbs of Tulsi Devi, or she embodies that also. You know? Like that. It's either way of looking at it. You know, it's not surprising that these, like Yamuna's qualities would transpose to Tulsi Devi, to Vrinda Devi, and Ganga Devi also, and Saraswati and all that. I thought, in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana story, it mentions that the co-wives of Narayan were arguing with each other, what is the most important co-wife? And they made Tulsi Devi's heart sad, and she disappeared into her form. And then in the 19th chapter, that Narayana glorified her, and she came out. So I was thinking, the only way I'll get it is if I get those ladies later on saying with their mouth that Tulsi's better. You know, like that. For example, suppose Lakshmi says it, or Ganga says it, or Saraswati says it, like that. They would have to say with their mouth that Tulsi's bitter. You know? I do one new, I was just looking at Hari Bhakti Vilas again this morning. That Tulsi Nectarbeads are sometimes mixed with Datri Phal, which is, Datri Phal is Amla. They actually, but Amla is big, nah. So it means that evidently the Nectarbeads that they use in those days must have been big. Sometimes there's small outlets. I've seen in Vrindavan sometimes if the water is very less, the tree gives very, very small fruits. Like that, about that size. And most of the time, in other places in India, the fruits are about this big. Pretty good sized fruits. But they actually make a necklace of those. Now, of course, you can say when the fruit is dried, it probably has a much smaller circumference, you know. But it's interesting, they used to mix amla fruit and tulsi leaves and mix it together and put it around the neck. Interesting. So these two ladies, Datri, Amla is Saraswati Devi, and Tulsi is Tulsi. So it means that they were very much together, worshiping the Supreme Lord. You know? And it's considered to be very high class to use Amla, you know, to worship Krishna underneath an Amla tree. Amalakya Kadasi is for that. It's really cool stuff, you know. So I'm thinking, wow, it's interesting. Maybe in the old days they used to mix. So it must have been. When I get back to Braj Nash, then I'm probably going to go to my friend Vishnu Sharma, you know, downtown, who runs a Tulsi business. I'm going to say, hey, you got any of that, a mixture? You know? I'll show him that shloka. And I said, hey, you got any mixture? The person said, yeah, we can do it for you. How was it? I got to ask him, how was it in Braj? How was it in the old days? You know, anyway. Either they use really big. I've seen like Bubba sometimes with really big Tulsi neck beads, you know, that big around their neck, you know. Could do, you know. It's either that or whatever. But interesting with Dr. Fall, you know, mix it with that. Well, does it look when it's dry? Do they both look? I've seen Dr. looks pretty brown. I mean like really, really black, you know, when it's dry. Because they have like salted pieces from Gujarat that they package and they distribute it, you know, to carry with you for traveling, you know, amla for travel, like that. And people use it as rejuvenative. But Datri fall. All right. And then another thing about it, what I have to ask Vishnu Sharma, and I have to ask him, I said, but the seed, nah, because everybody who's eaten a raw amla, it's like tough, but, you know, it's a little bitter, but, you know, you get used to it, like anything that's bitter. The seed, how are you going to poke that seed with a needle without breaking it, without breaking the seed? Because sometimes when they make garlands, like sometimes during festivals you make garlands with apple or something like that. You stick a needle through the apple. You know, that's not a big deal, you know, sticking a needle through an apple or something. But in Datri, you know, it's like sometimes the seed splits, you know, so sometimes you get away with it, sometimes you don't. How do you put the needle through? You know, that'll be interesting. Yes, Prabhu.
Maybe they do a polyacration and it dries on the stream.
They what?
Maybe they put the hole through when it's fresh and before it's dry, and then it dries.
We'll see. I'm going to yak with him. When I get back to Braj, I'm going to track him down and yak with him in the market and see what he says. He's a straightforward fellow. He told me many interesting things about Tulsi neck beads before. Pretty cool. Now this is a neat thing. When I saw that in Hari Bhakti Vilas about wearing a necklace of Datri and Tulsi together, I thought, now that's pretty cool. Yes, Prabhu.
You were talking about Gauri, how the artist would paint her.
Yeah.
I think, as an actor, I would make her exactly draw her like Gauri, but the eyes should be Krishna's. The way the twinkle in the eye, the way Gauri looks at Radharani is Krishna's eyes. You understand what I mean?
The thing is this, that you have to. Krishna's irises, you mean? Well, Krishna.
His eyes, there will be a twinkle in his eyes because he looks at Radha, flirtatious or loving. So this Gauri wouldn't have. Gauri would be just like a woman to another woman, or like a mother. But Krishna's eyes, if he's whatever dress he is on, will be always as Krishna, naughty.
No, but the thing is that Gauri, if she's mother, if you're being worshipped, if Gauri is worshipped as mother,
Yes. Then
if she has a relationship that this girl, Lali, Radharani Lali, is like my daughter, then the mother will look at the daughter with love.
Yeah, no, from far away, Katila will see Gauri, but the way Krishna looks at Radharani and Radharani recognize Krishna to the way he looks at her.
I don't know. The problem is that with artwork, you cannot get, with stained glass, you cannot get like you get with
stained
a painting.
Glass. Okay, that's it.
It's stained glass, nah. Stained glass is it's the you did the best. You did the best what you could.
Okay.
And the problem is that Indian artists are just not like Western artists when it comes to stained glass. They just put it fast and get rid of it and sell it off fast and you bring the next one. They're not going to take patience and make really small pieces of glass. They draw on the glass? There's some glass that they paint, they're painted on, but the problem is that they're always worried about the paint coming off or something like that later on. It's etched in the glass. Engraved in the glass.
Then another thing, of the two things you don't forget, that when they never forget those people who have done anything good.
Anyway, that would be another one, but anyway,
yeah.
We'll see what, let's see if I ever eventually find the Sanskrit. You know, or whether it was Rancherji Maharaj's own Vijnanam, it was his own personal realization, or whether actually there's some Sanskrit Pramanam behind it, behind his realization. I don't know. Another thing I haven't found out is that the descendants, the sadhu descendants of Rancherji Maharaj, are they still available in Vrindavan now? You know, 30 years later, they're his disciples or whatever. Then I could probably go and ask them, you know, if I find them. Anyway, it's something to think about. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Jai Gornatai, Jai Radhavallabha, Jai Jagannath Bhadi Subhadra, Jai Tulsi Rani Shalagram Bhavan. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.